Already, there are applications on the market that put a blind person in a standalone, customized environment for word processing and even internet surfing. And there's another one coming out. This one is going to be run under Linux. It's called Project Ocularis, and JP Schnappercat joins us to talk about that. JP, it sounds like a very exciting project. For those who aren't familiar with it yet, tell us about it.
Ocularis is a project that essentially aims to make a Linux distribution for the visually impaired that focuses all on commonly available hardware. One of the main problems I find with current adaptive software and hardware is that it's very, very expensive and it's very hard to obtain. I actually spoke to one of the reasons this project was started was because I talked to a friend of mine who's works in special education, and she said someone she was tutoring had an absolutely ancient computer that they didn't use much, didn't have any internet access, and the printer was slow, and they really didn't even use it. It was a Braille printer, and they didn't use the computer much at all, not because it wouldn't have been of benefit, but because it was old, it was slow, and they couldn't afford anything else. So it was in response to incidents like that, and Linux is sort of an ideal platform for that because it's freely available and because it's so much more customizable than anything else you can find out there.
What's interesting about this is that there are so many corporate entities who are now giving away older computers because really it's not worth selling them. This could be a way for some people who are not yet into computers to at least get some kind of entry into the area.
Yes, that's very true. Something even before I started this project that has always been why I liked Linux is it will run on just about anything out there. I think the bare minimum requirement is about a 486 with 8 megabytes RAM. And as you said, companies are giving those away these days. So there's a lot of potential to, if you could put a $100 486 on the desk of everyone who's visually impaired in the country, that would make a huge difference.
What sort of functionality are you envisaging having in the package?
We want to mainly focus on basic applications. That's to say, we don't aim to provide the functionality of, say, an Office, fully featured Office suite like Star Office or Microsoft Office. We think I've discussed these sort of features and what features are necessary in Office applications, internet browsers, and for more than one person and people who are visually impaired, I've heard that a lot of the features, formatting features, appearance-related features, just aren't necessary. And so, although at first some people might find the software slightly simplified or oversimplified, we're basically going to the core central features. We want them to work well. So we want a lot of functionality, but we want basic functionality. And if my general policy is don't try to do every feature, just do the main ones well. And if people want to add others, that's the beauty of open source software. But I think for the majority of home users and end users, the basic function should work perfectly fine.
Will it browse the web at this stage?
Yeah, sure. It will be able to browse the web and do have complete web functionality within reason for something that has audio output. But it will be able to do the web and do email, head on an email client, basic internet functions and network protocol, things like that. And then basic applications, word processor, calendar, calculator, possibly finance or accounting, file manager, internet browser and email client, like I already said. So it's basic applications, and there'll be also a support for command line commands in Bash. Are you familiar with Bash?
Yes, absolutely. So, such as the Bash language in DOS, for instance.
Sure, sure. And command line options for screen readers for just text mode applications. So if you want to go and download whatever other text console-based application that's not included in Oculators. You can do that and you can use it. So we want to provide access to everything, but we don't want to try to cover absolutely everything. That might be a little bit of a suicide mission.
I suppose that when I think about Linux, I think about convoluted command line syntax and, tricky config files and things, and I don't equate Linux with ease of use at all. So I'm wondering whether you're going to shield users from that, given that many people who use this may well never have used a piece of software before. Is it all going to be menu-driven and things once you get into the application?
I think we're going to shy away from traditional menu-driven things like that, because from what people have told me, menus, the whole concept of menu doesn't really work when it's in audio format. You know what I mean? There is going to be a big part of this project is simplifying Linux for audio output. We are going to try to shield users in a way that is a good way to put it, but we do want to make it accessible and convey to users that there's more than what we're showing you. And, you know, you can look here for documentation on how to use the command line or how to use some other very low-level function that hasn't been made beautiful, if you will. So, yes, there is going to be the main focus on trying to make all of this understandable. I mean, command line options and, all the different pipes and processes and things like that would be overwhelming for any new user, let alone someone who cannot as easily or quickly read the documentation, or the majority of the visually impaired tend to be elderly people statistically. And in general, we don't want to have to give someone a course that, you know, a long hundreds of pages of instructions or a multi-week course about Linux and command line and the console and bash or tcsh or things like that. That's just not effective for anyone, let alone someone that might be elderly or that just can't process things necessarily as efficiently as it would be able to do so visually, unfortunately.
Will the application be self-voicing, or are you intending to support existing speech synthesizers already on the market?
We're going to use existing speech synthesizers in order to simplify the whole process. There are a lot of good ones out there. I think tentatively we're going to use Festival and something called SpeechD, which stands for Speech Damien, that goes along with that. And but Festival is a very high-quality speech synthesizer, and along with SpeechD, you can pipe phrases to Festival very efficiently. You use a lot less RAM than just running Festival interactively. And it has the highest quality speech synthesis, probably the highest quality speech synthesis I've seen in commercial or open source applications. So we are going to use pre-existing speech synthesis in order to make everyone's life easier.
Because there are a lot of blind people who have hardware speech synthesizers that are connected to a serial port, such as the Deck Talk or Double Talk and a number of others, will they be supported?
In the long term, I think external hardware speech synthesizers is something we're going to want to support. And there's already something called ZipSpeech, which is a version of ZipSlack, which is in turn a version of Slackware Linux, which supports hardware voice synthesizers. So that's something we want to support in the long term, just because we want to make a generally across the board easy to use desktop audio desktop, and that's part of it. But I think in the short term, we're going to focus on software based speech synthesizers, because because of price and to keep the entire system under $500. And prices of the speech synthesizer supported by ZipSpeak and other programs and Linux in general tend to be quite expensive.
What kind of time frame are you looking at before you have a release of this available for people to take a look at?
Well, there are about three stages that I envision it, and they all have a different time frame. The first stage, which is what we're currently focusing on, is the design stage. And at the end of the design stage, we should have a basic sort of specifications and details about how each application should interact with the user. That stage should end this September 30th. Within about approximately 4 to 6 months from now, we expect to have a basic desktop environment. That's assuming that we continue to have the developer involvement that we've started to have already, and that number of developers increases at a reasonable rate that we've already encountered. And then approximately 6 to 12 months from now, we expect to have the full distribution ready and stable. That includes installation and configuration. But that, in general, our distribution time frame is much foggier because of all the technical factors that go into making an installation program and making a configuration that outputs to speech with reasonable RAM requirements. Otherwise, loading all of Festival and SpeechD or the like into RAM would make the RAM requirements so unreasonable that the original target hardware system and target hardware system price of under $500 would be totally unattainable.
I take it that you do this professionally. You develop software for a living?
No, I don't. I do not.
Okay. So this is kind of like a labor of love for you in some respects, something that's motivating you to make a difference for people.
Yes, exactly. And that is the case for other people, other volunteers as well. Surprisingly so. A lot of them are not professional programmers. They are working in completely unrelated fields or fields they just happen to be interested in it, or sometimes they're just interested in making the world more accessible, not necessarily computers per se. But no, I don't have any computer. I have computer training, but I don't do programming or administration for a living.
And where does the name Ocularis come from?
The name Ocularis comes from, it means Latin for of the eye. I was looking for something that had a ring to it, an operating system ring to it, and tied into the whole theme and purpose of the distribution, and I scoured the OED and dictionary until I found an appropriate sounding Latin root.
Fair enough. Do you have any blind people working on the project with you at the moment?
I believe we have one, possibly two visually impaired blind people, blind developers at the moment. I'm not sure about the second. It's not the sort of thing, obviously, it doesn't matter and it shouldn't matter to me. Any input I get is great.
Presumably, you'll be doing some sort of field testing with a beta product, though, to get feedback from your target group as to how it's panning out.
Sure, of course, yes. I've already started discussing the possibility of getting in touch with state services for the blind to do testing. There are various computer training courses, and they have the sort of computer that would run Ocularis well, not necessarily the newest thing, but something that, you know, a reasonable hardware requirement that would be perfect for testing. So, yes, eventually that's something we're really going to want to push in order to make sure that it's usable, that it really is something that can be intuitive for people, and that they don't have to go and read lots and lots of complicated documentation about shortcuts or keystrokes in order to just use this on a daily basis. So, yeah, we're going to be doing a lot of focusing once we get past development releases. We're going to be doing a lot of testing and communicating with services to try to get any involvement that we can.
Now, although there will be some people listening to this program under Linux, with programs like FreeAmp and a few others, the majority will be listening under Windows, and they would never expect to receive the source code of the screen reader that they're using so that they can make their own modifications. I guess the most that they would expect would be to get the script language sorted out so they can program a few changes. Can you explain what the general public license is, and what are the ramifications in terms of customizability for blind people who will use this software?
Well, the general public license essentially means that anyone has the right to not only see the source code and use the source code, but they can use it for personal reasons, they can use it and publicly distribute it for free, but they must distribute it for free and make it free, make all their changes open sourced also. I believe actually the term that the Free Software Foundation prefers is free software. They prefer that over open source. But anyone can use it, anyone can change it, and continue to change it. It's a ripple effect. And contributions are made back to one project. The repercussions for our project, for Ocularis, are pretty stunning. It means that we don't have to go out and write our own internet client, or our own email client, or our own word processor, or calculator, or finance application, or anything like that. We can simply go and find an application that we like, a free software application, and get the source code, look at the source code, and we can cut and paste if we'd like. We can take large bits. We can use the whole thing verbatim and package it up, and just provide give it the ability to re-express itself in a audio format. It's pretty amazing. And also included in the Genia public license is I'm allowed to distribute it. I'm not even allowed to put it on a CD. The source code does have to be available though at a website or in another fashion. And I can even charge for it. I'm not going to, but theoretically someone could charge for the CD as long as the source code's available. Which is, I think, the theory behind the business models of Red Hat and a lot of companies like that. But we're not trying to become a business. We're just doing this as something that should be done to help people. And without open source and without the Genia public license or licenses like it, it would be, I don't want to say it wouldn't be possible, but it would be near impossible. It would be extremely, extremely difficult for us to accomplish what we want to accomplish in the time frame that we've set up. And with the resources, which it's completely volunteer driven, with the, we have zero funding, zero money, we just have essentially a bunch of volunteers with computers, it would not be possible without the Genia public license. So thanks, Free Software Foundation.
Does that make it harder to provide technical support, though, if somebody's using a modified version of Ocularis and you're not quite sure how it's been modified? Will that create problems?
That can create problems. Although, generally, if someone is using a modified, or if they've modified it themselves, they sort of know that they are getting into, they're going to have to go rely on other users at a mailing list, or developers more likely at a mailing list, And that if they call us up or email us and say, help, I don't know what I've done, or how do I do this, that our main focus is plain ocularis. And that's a general assumption, I think, under above free software, that if you modify it, it's your own responsibility to support it. It does create some problems, you're right. You are correct. But I don't foresee that being a major difficulty. And if it does, then we can create another, we can create the Ocularis documentation project. similar to the Linux documentation project.
If people want to keep abreast of how this develops, is there a website that people can go to where information on the project is provided and updates are offered?
Sure. Our website is Ocularis. I can spell that. Ocularis. .sourceforge.net. Sourceforge is the way you think it'd be.
Right.
That's our main website, and there are links to forum and development information and mailing lists and the like.